Hi, my name's Sean. That guy on the other side. That's weird. You're on the other side of me now. It's Chris Ford, a.k.a. The Objective Geek. My whole world been turned upside down. Welcome to Avatar The Last Podcasters. And we hope you're having a great day. We never say that, but we always think it. Chris, how are you? What have you been up to in the past 10 minutes? And or the coming week? I like to project what I'm going to do. When we do this, like the record back to back, and I say what I was doing, I'm trying to manifest it into reality, what I'm going to do this week.
I wonder by this time, I got a new favorite show. It is from Bill Lawrence, the creator of Scrubs and Ted Lasso and various other things that I love. It is with Steve Carell. It's on HBO Max. It is called Rooster.
Ooh, I see a lot of ads for that.
It is. I don't know if it's on a. I don't know if I'll recommend it to you to keep my streak alive.
Sure.
But last episode, I was cracking up laughing. But it's like if I enjoyed Shrinking, which I don't enjoy Shrinking for some reason, that I can't quite. Like, I love the cast in Shrinking, which is also by Bill Lawrence. It has an amazing cast. And for some reason, I just don't enjoy watching that show as much as I should, given the creator in the cast.
I've never even heard of that one. Rooster, I got a lot of ads for when I was borrowing your HBO to watch the March Madness. So I saw ads. I didn't realize it was Bill Lawrence. I will admit I was indifferent to the advertisement, like it was just another show. But knowing that it's Bill Lawrence helps.
Yeah, no. It was like, so Steve Carell is a author. He gets, I want to say blackmailed, but he becomes a professor at the school where his daughter teaches, is also a professor. He is divorced. So there's things around that, but it's just this, all the episodes have been good. His daughter's going through a divorce also because her husband, you know, her husband is played by Jamie from Ted Lasso. John C. McGinley is in this. He plays the dean of the college, and he's great. It has Scrubs DNA in there, and another Bill Lawrence, has just Bill Lawrence DNA in it. But this last episode, I was just cracking up laughing at it. But it's not like a funny, it's not a funny ha-ha comedy.
Oh, that's too bad.
That's what I said. I don't know if I could recommend it to you. I'm surprised we haven't talked about Shrinking before.
So let's put a scale of there that goes from like Ted Lasso being funny but not sole purpose haha funny, and then Scrubs being farther along that path of intentionally supposed to be funny first and foremost. Does it fall in between those, or is it on the other side?
It's on the other side of Ted Lasso.
Okay, yeah, I'm probably out. First, you said things that made my red flags go up because you, like, one of the first things he said is like, well, he's divorced. You started talking about relationships. It's like, and now
that's why I was like, Charles is not gonna like the relationship because his daughter just this is how messy this show kind of is. His daughter, who's just got divorced, her ex husband cheated on her with a grad student there. Grad student is part of the cast, sort of. But them two also hooked up after the fact. Oh, and the grad student got pregnant. The daughter ended up inadvertently burning down his house. That's funny. But
you're right. Arson's hilarious.
Because he had this, like, this pretentious first edition book or something. And then, like, she was like, you know what? He loves this book. I'm going to burn it. But it ends up burning the whole house down. And that's why, and it's a house that's like a college house. Like, it's a given to the professor, like, it's a campus house given to the professor because they're a professor. And so Steve Carell's character is a famous author, and the dean is like, hey, I'll, you know, let this go. You know, just teach for us. He's not like evil, but he wants to get his college, you know, higher.
Yeah, he's got his motives. I'll let you finish that, and then we can.
But yeah, it re-discuss. Is. It's on. There's not. It is. It's slightly on the other side of Ted Lasso, I think.
Okay.
Yeah.
Ted Lasso, and I think I even probably said it in our episodes, is probably as not funny as I care to get. That's probably, like Avatar, I suppose, depending on if you count that in a similar, but like it's just all TV shows in a bucket. It's like, okay, I guess Avatar and Ted Lasso are as not funny as I want a thing to be, which is kind of funny in its own right. But anyway, well, I don't know. I'm glad you like it. Good job, Bill Lawrence. And, you know, he does love his ships. He loves his ship drama, that guy.
He does. And that show absolutely has it.
You know who else loves ship drama, Chris? Is most people, I understand.
You are alone. I won't say you're not alone. You're not alone.
God forbid a white guy be in the minority on one item, you know?
Something not made and catered to you.
Exactly. Yeah, I'll get over it, I'm sure. But I'm glad it's good either way.
It's funny because, like, even when I was writing one of those scenes in Kids, and I was like, Child's not gonna like this, and I'm not expecting him to like it, and that's fine. I'm not a great writer. And Sean also doesn't.
I don't read like books,
relationship stuff, and so I knew immediately you're gonna be like,
That's amazing. It's like having a conscience, but instead of like feeding you useful information, like this is right and this is wrong, it's just my head putting up over your shoulder and be like, ew. That's amazing. And just because we quoted Aziz Ansari right before we started this episode, is this how you feel all the time? Every movie but Slumdog Millionaire. And I don't even remember what the other movie says.
We are white people.
We are white. Oh, man. Good bit. Chris, today we're going to do what we did last week for Avatar, but we're doing it for Legend of Korra. We're revisiting Legend of Korra, Book 1, Chapter 1, and I kind of approached it with a similar perspective, which I believe is slightly different how you approached it, and that's completely fine, but we're just revisiting it. I tried to put on, to the best of my ability, a fresh set of glasses. Chris probably went with the, and correct me if I'm wrong, with the what makes this such an effective pilot approach, and we're going to talk you through our revisitation of Korra Episode 1. Chris, you want to start or you want me to?
I will start.
Please.
Because Legend of Korra has a different task. The pilot episode has a different task to do than Avatar's pilot episode. And I love the intro here, but it doesn't. I love the intro. I really do. I love it. The avatars being actual, you know, when they do the four elements, it being actual avatars. In hindsight, I would like, if I made one change to the avatar pilot, in just general, I would like it to be the avatars, not just random benders. I thought I'd like it being, if it was going to be, like, Azula's in there, and Master Po. The other two are fairly nameless. I would like the other two to be somebody, or I would like them all to be avatars. Really, I want them all to be avatars, because I think that's cool. And I think they realized, like, oh, we should just make this avatars, as they did in Legend of Korra. Love the voiceover by J.K. Simmons. He comes out the gate. I think we get a great little recap of Avatar, and then it's just like the seasons change, so goes the Avatar, and don't get much of a sense for Korra yet, but that changes immediately. But yeah, so far I think I really like the intro. It's not as informative or anything as the or even expositioning as Atlas, but it is so good. And man, one thing I love about Legend of Korra is just the animation. It's so good.
Hearing J.K. Simmons' voice out the gate has like a level of serious, not serious in tone, but like, oh crap, they're serious about the sequel series to it just right out of the gate. And then the intro isn't as good overall, but what it does different that it is supposed to do different is like it hits you immediately with how this story is going to be different and unique from the last one. Just literally kind of punches you in the face right away with like, yep, different. We're in a brand new, completely different world and ballpark. Well, not different world, but a different ballpark here. And it covers, you mentioned like, yeah, okay, it's not literally as exposition-y, but it manages to set a really good tone,
yeah,
for said differences in a really small amount of time. Like, it manages to get your brain in this brand new place in a really short amount of time. And I think it does that very effectively.
Yeah. Real slight side note, tangent, but I remember the first time watching this. And it's funny, because I haven't really paid attention to the intro in years. But, like, now I'm, like, trying to get to your mindset of, like, if I haven't seen this before. One thing I absolutely love is that when Aang is introduced, he is just airbending the crap out of this intro. Like, he starts off just on one freaking finger and then does the spinner-rooney kick in the air. Like,
The whole zoom around.
If adult Aang in the movie is, if that's any indication of how he's going to be in the movie, I can't wait.
We can only hope. What was I going to say? It achieves a different purpose and it does it very well. Even if that purpose, through no fault of his own, does not include telling, 100 years worth of lore in 30 seconds. But it still hammers home a very important tonal point immediately.
I think so. I mean, just you see the city landscape and everything, and you're like, holy crap. City landscape? That's nuts.
Yeah, I don't know what I was expecting the first time I watched it, but I don't think that it was that. Like, just a post-industrial or maybe during Industrial Revolution, slight kind of steampunky city.
For being a fan at the time, we were already, before the show came out, they released the first image of Korra, and it was like, it was a shot of her back and she's like overlooking the city. And then like that image is like, was the first image we had of Legend of Korra. And it was like, oh my gosh, so much time has gone by. And like, there's a whole city in the background.
I don't recall those images from the time, but in a way I don't mind necessarily. I mean, I would have been happy at the time, I'm sure, but don't mind having pretty much gone into it almost completely blind when I started watching it when we were back in the Payless days. Almost completely blind. Chris, man, what else?
I wish we could. It would have been interesting if you had this podcast then and had you watch it at the same time. That would be so interesting to just jot our thoughts. Because I know we talked, like, anytime I would lend you a DVD or something, we would talk about it, like, the next day, especially Mondays when we're doing grunt work or something. Because Mondays just It was like, I don't know, forecasting or something. But it was Mondays
the
were
most
always more
repetitive work day for sure.
Yeah. But we would often talk about whatever I had lended you the over the weekend or whatever. And so I wish I could remember what those conversations were, especially around Legend of Korra.
Yeah, that would be interesting, or to have done a pretty legitimate, you know, like live react to it. Yeah. But
all you need to do is time travel.
Webcam days, you know.
Yeah, all you need to do is time travel. Put a recorder there. Doesn't phase anything in the time stream. Take the recorder back, just to pick up on random conversations we're having. Probably talk about Yu-Gi-Oh. I remember one time we were annoying Casey because we just went to a Yu-Gi-Oh competition the day before or something. I kept talking about how I could have won had I just did this one thing. And Casey was like, "Yeah, I heard, Chris. You could have won if you just did this one thing."
Yeah, because that was always on Fridays, right? So you had a couple days to ruminate on. Oh, I forgot we were supposed to play some Yu-Gi-Oh at some point this week. I'm still in that last season. I have my deck. I'm ready to play whenever. I have my deck complete. I just, you know, was hoping to get through that stupid last season. It takes forever. I think you said the other day, the only time I've ever had a Switch game crash is a card game, Chris. A card game. Only time.
Yeah, that's nuts.
Thanks, Konami. Anyway, ready to play whenever. But yeah, it would have been cool to live react. Yeah, plant, Chris, when you go back in time, plant the device very carefully. Because if I figure out back then that you're going back in time, I'll instantly be turned off because of it. You know how much I hate time travel, future Chris? Get out of here.
True.
I hate time travel in all my media, even non-fictional, current, real-life, non-media. That's the worst. That's the worst kind of time travel.
Imagine in 100 years from now, they will be able to time travel, but just not time travel, but record time travel, right? That way you don't change the past or anything. There's no paradoxes, but you can just capture moments from the past, whether it's audio or visual.
It'll be like the Wayback Machine is for the internet, but it'll just be real life, and it'll all be controlled by Microsoft and or Amazon Web Services, all
or
of it.
Micro-Amazon,
and cram being a keyword there.
Yeah. Jeez, just imagine if those two combined.
Ugh. Thankfully, I think they hate each other, so I think we're okay for a little while, but I can't validate that. Anyway... Yeah, live reaction would have been really cool. Chris, we've talked about the intro. What else jumped out at you?
The biggest thing that I think this episode does is tell us this ain't Aang. Like, immediately, just the first, and I think this is good. Some people might be like, this is not good. But I think through very little exposition, well, we get a little bit, but we immediately get, this is not Aang. This is a fiery teenage girl who is not a pacifist. Like, immediately, I'm the Avatar, you got to deal with it. I love it. I wouldn't change a thing about Korra's introduction. And that goes right into her Fire Nation test. It's like, oh, she is about it, and she is eager, and she is like, I feel like we learned so much about her in the first episode. It's funny because I feel like we learned, wow, this first episode really is a microcosm, I think, of maybe all of Legend of Korra, because to me one of the biggest differences between Legend of Korra and Avatar is that Legend of Korra is more focused on Korra as the main character than Atla is on Aang. Right. Like, Atla's like, here are four characters. Sure, one is more important than the others, but all four are pretty important. And all four have their own backstories.
Not just from the intro, even, Chris. Avatar is more like, here is the conflict of this grand narrative. And that's what the whole show goes on to be exactly about. And then to your point, Cora is much less so, which, you know, and they wouldn't have known that at the time based on how the show was created, but Cora being much more of a character piece, like the first 5 minutes of the episode is you seeing that Cora is like, nope, there's something going on. I'm going to take this in my own hands. I'm going to defy people's wishes. I'm going to get this thing done. It just like immediately out of the gate is framed. Well, and even in the intro is framed much more of like, yep, this is not so much a big narrative lore story. This is about this character as a character piece.
Yeah.
And it hammers that home immediately.
Yeah. And we talked about last week how Katara, one thing I love, okay, sorry, I am. We talked about last week about how Katara was the Disney princess. And this, Cora is the Disney protagonist.
No, that's fair.
Gotta be all inclusive with the male characters like Hercules. Gotta
include Hercules also.
Also Simba's the same way too. Well, Simba's not like, Simba's different. To me, Simba isn't like, I want to leave where I'm currently at. But most other Disney protagonists are like, I want to leave where I'm at. There's more out there. And Cora is like that. Of like, I want to go. Like, I want to see the world. And like, there's a certain drive of of exploration for these main characters.
It's a great comparison. I would say that she comes out a little better equipped when she's doing this right away than like a, you know, your Disney protagonist. And that's part of what makes her interesting. Chris, what makes me think of, and this first episode is a pretty good demonstration. Actually, we talked about Castlevania last time. That's funny. Is how in video games, we don't do it as much anymore, but it used to be video game tutorials. Not the best ones, but my favorite. You would start off overpowered, like Castlevania Symphony of the Night. You'd start off overpowered, and it teaches you how to play the game. And then you run into some kind of conflict that all right, now you're kind of starting a square one. Mm-hmm. It feels like that. Like, it feels like bending or learning to bend the elements isn't really going to be the crux of the story. And it's a nice big change of pace. But like I said, physically, Cora coming out of the gate just very well equipped again lends itself to like, no, even the climb, even the conflicts in here is going to be a different kind of conflict.
Yep. The other big thing, oh man, I love there's just to keep hammering the point, there's this beautifully animated scene where Cora is like sitting on the edge and she like has her arms folded. Something about it is just like Mike and Brian, probably specifically Brian, because he seemed to be more in charge of the art. Like Legend of Cora is just so beautifully animated. Like the backgrounds are like they stepped their game up. Yeah, I think narratively speaking, this whole episode is really all about an introduction to Cora. You know, when she's in the city, she takes on the Triple Threat Triad group. She beats the crap out of them. And that shows a lot about her character. I think most of, and it sounds simplistic, but to me, most of this episode is just I think it's a great introduction. I don't know if I'll call it a masterclass, but I think it's a great introduction to your main character. What they want, their wants, their desires, and I think you even get a little bit into their fear.
I'm going to nitpick just a little bit. What there's a natural transition or a natural segue from what you said. Chris, I did find myself, as I was watching this, trying to put myself in kind of fresh watch shoes, that there's a lot to take in. It moves it moves very quickly. And, you know, obviously it kind of defies your expectation coming from the previous show. But it moves very quickly. And there's not a lot of exposition, and not that I necessarily want it to be, but just there's a whole lot of new city, new, like, I'm trying to make a lot of inferences based on what I'm seeing where, okay, actually maybe there could be a little slightly better exposition or maybe a hair slower. That could very easily, first of all, that's a nitpick. I'm talking the little nits. Second of all, that could just be a product of again, the way that this season was created. Like, hey, we got, I forget, 10 or 12 episodes. Even number, right? 12?
12.
12. We have 12 episodes. We don't have a whole lot of time. We got to cram a lot into a little bit of space. Very possibly a product of that. But I found that I felt like I had to pay more attention. I didn't get to, like, ease in into this episode, if that makes sense.
No, I don't think I don't disagree with that sentiment. I mean, it goes... I'm sorry. Honestly, they globetrot, but, like, they go from the South Pole to Republic City. Republic City is huge. You go around Republic City. Then you're out in the street. You're in jail. You're at press conference. Like, while Aang was just like, I am in the South Pole.
I'm a nicely in a small animated South Pole, but that's mostly just white and blues. You know what I mean? There's not a whole lot of information to absorb from what you're looking at so much as kind of verbatim what the characters are saying. It's a very different watch.
It is. It absolutely is. It's very much like just a day in a life of. I feel like it's just like a one day story. It'll be interesting if they actually try to, like, introduce. You know, they introduce Tenzin. We don't get much about him besides that he's just Tenzin's. That he's the son of Aang, and then.
But it's J.K. Simmons' voice who's, you know, did the intro, so you know that's going to be very important. This is not a passing thing. This is a key character.
Yeah. We get some talk, and we get a little bit of guitar. But really, honestly, it's just really solely focused on Korra. Like, it would be hard to even, like, throw in Mako and Bolin into this. Which I think would be a mistake in terms of this pilot.
Also, I don't know that they would have a lot to add from a pilot perspective. So, yeah, I agree. There's plenty.
I do think they could have introduced the threat. They had them on at the end there, and they did have the Equalist guy with his vouchers and stuff. So I don't think this is as perfect of a pilot as Albatross pilot is, because I do think they could have shown, hey, what will happen if our main character isn't successful this season?
You don't get a clear and present danger quite to the same, or if you did, it feels more like, well, it's crime in the city. You don't get the kind of big, which, you know, in Avatar, if we're, you know, nitpicking, that's like, well, there it's Zuko, which ultimately it becomes false. But it hits when they show Zuko as obviously like, yeah, no, this is the bad guy. He's instantly intriguing. And we don't kind of get that same satisfaction over here.
Yeah, and we also know that, like, from the intro, the Avatar has to save the world. Right now, we don't know what Korra has to save. I think what could have been better, and maybe brought in more of that thing, is if that with that triad instead was like the Equalist and doing something, maybe, and Korra stops them. Like, maybe they're going on a cheap blocking spree or something. I don't know. Or maybe they're trying to dismantle something. And she stops him while also getting arrested. That really, I think, brings to the forefront, from a pilot episode standpoint, the threat that is looming.
Agreed completely. Chris, tell me about the animation sound design here. What did that evoke from you?
I think the animation is like I've always been blown away by the animation, and it's funny because I from a, it's a different like when I watched Avatar the first time, I wasn't like, oh, this animation's so beautiful and so perfect, especially the first season where we're kind of dealing with mostly blues. But man, just granted, I was older, I was probably 23 when Legend of Korra came out, and I was blown away by the animation. Holy crap, Legend of Korra is like 15 years old.
It's officially retro in video game terms.
But man, like, and they like the backgrounds are beautiful. Like, the still images in this show are just great. And I don't think it's going to be, I don't think any show has topped it, whether it's has topped it in the sense of like still images looking beautiful, backgrounds looking beautiful, whether it's anime or American 2D animation. They just not out of part. I don't think they're going to try and do better than this in the new show. New show gives me a more cartoony vibe, if that makes sense, or less detailed vibe.
I want that back. I think that Korra's animation is top-notch. It is tremendous in detail. There's so much to look at and see, but at least in this first episode, it misses some of that vibrance, some of that just charm, maybe if we can use subjective terms. That it's like I can absolutely respect visually that this is a far more detailed, impressive piece of work. But I missed the brightness. I missed the cartooniness.
Well, I don't think we're missing brightness in Korra. I think it's I think that there's more abstractness, or just more, I think there's less detail, which maybe lets you fill in your own imagination things.
You don't feel like it's less, like if Avatar: The Last Airbender is GameCube games and then Korra is like PlayStation 2 games, just the color palette I find less appealing. Maybe that's just the city color palette is probably the primary culprit. Grays, browns, kind of
No, I don't know. I think
muddy greens.
it might just depend. If I'll compare pilot to pilot, 'cause I have them here. Well, Avatar is mostly blues. Like, it's just a bunch of blues. Not even a bunch of blues. One blue, slight white and stuff. And I think Legend of Korra is more vibrant. Like,
Really?
I think probably in general, Legend of Korra is probably more vibrant and maybe even more colorful, because even season 3 of Avatar has a reddish hue to it. Season 1 has more bluish hues.
Season
Season
two's got the
2,
most greens and browns for sure.
yeah. So, well, I would take Legend of Korra animation over anything.
Strictly animation maybe, but pilot to pilot, the color palette of original Avatar, even just the plain white is more appealing to me
Interesting.
than the grays and greens cityscape personally. That's interesting, though. Will not argue
That's
with the core animation over everything though. It's like exactly the right amount of detail to be wildly impressive, but still be animated. Like we're not
Yeah.
imitating realism here, we're just
Oh,
excellent
crap.
detail.
This show looks so difficult. Like trying to draw city backgrounds that are all pretty detailed. I just know, jeez, yeah, I just know the animators had nightmares about the show, probably.
That's a nice way to put that, yeah.
If I had to guess, Brian, and this is, I've never met or spoke to them, but Brian probably loves, because he's like the animator, he probably looks back on, besides, if we put season two of Korra, because that had, not because of the quality of the show, like fan perception of it, but there were like lots of there were lots of production issues with season two of Korra, animation wise, with them, with the studios and stuff. Studio Mir, no, it wasn't Studio Mir. I think it was Studio Parrot. Yeah, Studio Parrot. They had a lot of issues with them. I think if you take out season two and look at everything else, I would guess the creators probably had probably looked back on Legend of Korra more fondly than they do in Avatar. Because I think they had the chance to do what they really want to do with like animation and stuff.
From an art perspective, yeah, I can get on board with that.
Yeah.
Interesting. Chris, what else? Anything else pop out at you?
You know, voice acting wise, you know, everything's good. Like I said, J.K. Simmons probably carries most of it. Although at that time, I wasn't that aware of J.K. Simmons. And I wasn't that aware of voice actors in 2011 of, like, following them and trying to and paying close attention to the voice actors.
Yeah, to me, he just would have just been the Spider-Man guy, you know. Yeah.
But his voice is so different from that.
Yeah.
Tenzin.
This is before his State Farm. State Farm work. I will say that even though it maybe materializes for me a little different later, like in how my feelings evolve and change, I will say it's easy to see being excited about moving to a completely different environment, like to in a city, to something that feels maybe more modern, more graspable. And I can see my brain had an easy time being like, yeah, I can get on board with a complete change of scenery. So I don't know if that always sticks with my longer term feelings.
Yeah.
But it showed through as I was trying to rewatch this way this time.
It was freaking wild at the time. It was exciting, I would say that.
What else? Any additional thoughts?
No, I don't think it's I don't think it's as part of a pilot as Avatar. But I think it's a perfect introduction to the character of Korra. I think it's a perfect introduction to introducing your new main protagonist.
Fair, yeah, great. I think it does a really great job of introducing a different tone, and I think that's important to the audience. I'm sure, you know, I think that was probably instantly divisive, Chris. Like, if you love Avatar and you go right into this hoping for more Avatar, it would almost be like an instant turnoff. But if you go in wanting to, you know, watch a good new creation, like, this is probably very polarizing. Love, hate. Probably very little
indifference. I have no
idea.
I wasn't paying attention to internet comments at that time, really, especially around the show. The only time I've seen internet comments around season one of Korra was like the finale episode, which that stupid Nickelodeon's Facebook channel spoiled the ending. Like it showed that, you know, the image of all the avatars. Like, that day that it came out. I was like, what the heck? Like, that's a huge surprise at the end of season one when Korra sees all the avatars. And they just had that as the image, like, shared it on Facebook. Like, that's in the last 3 minutes of the episode. Like,
killing me, guys. Come on. That's too bad. But anyway, I had a lot of fun revisiting this. I think, you know, in between cheating my way through Zelda games, there's a reasonable chance it might be time for my next rewatch, because I haven't rewatched since Geo. So, you know, it could be time to watch again. Let this be my kickoff.
Fine, I've been on somewhat of a rewatch. It's like I feel like I'm just like, I'm in season two, and there's something about me that was just like, all right, once I get into season three, I know it won't stop. Like, I'll just keep watching until the end.
That's
and
the
so
point
I think I kind of...
Absolutely.
Yeah.
It probably wouldn't take that long, realistically, for that to... You know, is it really season three, or is, you know, a smaller increment? Yeah, it's great. Go back and rewatch it, and then rewatch the rest of the show, just because. That's all I got, Chris. Thanks for.
I was looking at my notes.
Oh yeah,
I was ignoring you.
Oh no,
looking
sorry.
At my phone.
Anything else before we sign off?
It's like when Kanye was like, I wasn't taking it as he said. All right. Aziz Ansari had a Kanye story. Of like, Kanye like went to the bathroom, apparently came back. He's like, just want you to know, I wasn't taking the shit. I was looking in my telescope.
His whole Kanye bit is really easy to just imagine. Like, yeah, that's what Kanye would do.
Hey, shut the fuck up. Homie trying to tell some jokes. Up.
Homie trying to tell some jokes.
And that was the greatest thing you could say to a comedian.
Oh, my goodness. That's no John Mulaney jokes references today, but three Aziz Ansari references. I just listened to the one the other day about he's talking about South Carolina being pretty racist, but they have delicious biscuits. Anyway, thanks for watching. And my name's Sean. That's Chris Ford, who's on the other side, and I haven't quite gotten used to that yet. It's been Avatar The Last Podcasters. Please leave all of the positive interactions with us that you're willing. We appreciate all of them. And I will leave more details about the episode in the description, as always. And yeah, thanks a lot. We will see you next time.